Hey, everybody, welcome to the Culture Shock Podcast. My name is Stephen Adeboye, and I've got my special guest today. I mean, obviously, we're in quarantine, so it's actually a video conference call. So we're making do with what we got. But my two guests are here today. So would you like to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Owen Thompson. I've come in today from, I guess, an entrepreneurial perspective, where I'm founder of a company called Oxbridge Watches. And then, Zap, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. I thought you were going to do a bit more of a background there, but I'm Xavier. I'm with Owen at Oxbridge Watches, and I'm the head of growth there.
Oh, awesome stuff. So just give me a little bit of background, Oxbridge Watches. I've obviously gone to the website, and I've seen the amount of watches that you have. They're very prestigious. They're very classy. And I've seen that you've got male and female watches as well. But talk to me about how you guys got started.
Yeah, I mean, so my background, it's totally different. I've got a military background. I came out of the Air Force a couple of years ago, wanting to try something new. And I started studying, which is where I met Xavier. I started studying in the business school in Cambridge. And I used to wear this one of these watches that I got on one of the fighter squadrons that I was on when I was a pilot. And we had a bit of a tradition where... whenever you finished your kind of your fighter pilot training and you got your wings and you got onto a frontline squadron, you were entitled to get yourself a watch, and they tended to be like a Breitling or a Bremont watch, but it would have the squadron crest engraved onto the front of the watch face, and they were all like very limited edition, very exclusive, and the watch companies do a very good rate for the military guys as well, so you can kind of get it past the wife, split it into monthly payments, all that, you know. So I was wearing one of these watches, one of these limited edition squadron watches, to one of our formal dinners at the university. And some of the guys came up to me and were asking questions about it. And I think there's a lot of watch enthusiasts around. Mm. And they were saying, oh, you know, it's a shame we don't have like a Cambridge edition of one of these watches. And I still had some contacts in the watch industry from when we got the squadron watches done. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, that perhaps I could get like a batch of these done for the class or something. But the more I looked into it, the more complicated it was. Right. Because it's different with the squadrons. We can do what we like with our own branding and things. But with the university, you obviously have to do it properly, and there are big penalties for getting it wrong. So I just sort of tried my luck. I started going down, bashing on doors in the licensing office and these kinds of things, seeing what conversations I could start. And then began really enjoying the process of negotiating licensing contracts and things like this. Relatively quickly, did manage to get a licensing contract set up with Cambridge. So in that short period of time, I'd spun up the optics of a nice functioning company and set up a website and all these kinds of things. And simultaneously having discussions with various watch manufacturers to see who might entertain the idea of doing a kind of limited edition watch for the university. And it just kind of grew arms and legs, to be honest. I suppose in the early days, I started it out of partially from an interest in watches, but partially also just from an interest in business and wanting to go in and learn lessons and try something new. But it grew so quickly that straight away Cambridge started suggesting to us, oh, well, you should speak to Oxford. Actually, it's very complimentary. I thought it would have been a real competitive thing and they would have wanted me to stay away. But they made some intros to Oxford. We got the Oxford contract on the same terms. And then we moved on from there and started moving more broadly into licensing and sponsorship and the watches and things. In that really early stage, back in late 2018, and I was kind of starting it up on my own with a little bit of guidance where I could from mentors and things, I was in a very different place to where we are now. And since Xavier's joined me and is helping me to grow the company, it's moved into another gear, because having someone else in the same mindset and it, you know, who's got that capacity to work hard and understands what you're trying to achieve is an absolute game changer. And that wasn't easy to get to. I went through a couple of interns and a couple of on the way to finding Xavier, on the way to looping back around to someone I knew well who was a really good match. So that's been a major learning point.
Oh yeah, absolutely. When you find the right partnership, you know, you can go very far with that. And you know, you've got different perspectives in terms of what you're able to contribute. So Xavier, how was your introduction? How was getting into sort of this business?
So, I mean, my background prior to joining Oxbridge Watches, well, I've been involved with tech startups in the past, some way more successful than others. Some of them were just massive money drains. And I'd literally just come from the startup where I actually Stephen, you and I first spoke with Zapper, which was a marketing technology company. Yeah. Coming straight from that into a company which is similar because it's licensing, branding, that kind of thing, but in something where there's products and stuff like that is very different. As well as the fact that whilst I've sort of always liked watches, but I didn't know much about them, it was like there was a very steep learning curve because firstly, watches, you know, there's so much about them that you need to understand. And, you know, when we're even writing the website and looking at some of the stuff on there, it's like I have to Google 1 in 5 words sometimes to kind of understand. Like I'd never heard of the word horology before I joined Oxford Watches, right? So, you know, now I can look at it and go, okay, now I understand what it is. I never really understood what an automatic watch was or anything like that. So learning curve, that was big. The bigger learning curve though was about licensing. So I'd known Owen for about 18 months, nearly 2 years, I think, by the time I'd joined Oxford Watches, because he's on the course and I'd heard the story of what was going on and all of this. So I knew that licensing existed and I saw Owen at conferences and things like that going to licensing, but I didn't know anything about the industry because it's one of those industries that unless you know about it, you might not even know that it really existed, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and that it is a huge industry with so much going on. I mean, it's everything from things like FIFA to down to Oxford Watches, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's so complicated. So in terms of learning, that was a huge, huge thing. And it's a really exciting business. And one of the things that Owen sort of touched on there was with me joining, and one of the things that we're moving into is moving into more of that kind of the business, looking at different things, different ways that we can apply what we've learned in the Oxford Watch brand and seeing what we can do for the future and what opportunities are out there. And it's within this world, which honestly is kind of hidden, but is absolutely exciting and absolutely vast, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, when you're talking about licensing, I think things that come to mind is FIFA and EA and fundamentally what that product is. So just for someone who's quite novice to the game, how was that licensing agreement?
So, you know, this is a really interesting point. And I didn't know anything about this either until I started getting into the company and doing all this sorts of stuff. And I came at this from a very naive perspective. A good example of what licensing is and what licensing isn't is if you compare it with sponsorship, for which I've got a great case study. When I started doing the watches, pretty much everyone I knew would say to me, oh, you're doing a limited edition, this, that, the other. You should produce a limited edition, insert my generic hobby here, watch. And my father-in-law said, oh, you should do a rugby watch because they're a big rugby family up in Yorkshire. And I said, all right, Phil, I'll think about that one. He said, you should do an England rugby watch. He said, honestly, all the guys at the club, they'd love it. A couple of months later, I started thinking, actually, that's not a bad idea. So I went down to Twickenham and started banging on the doors. And I said, I'd like a licensing deal, please. But like I've done with Oxford and Cambridge, they were absolutely adamant that they wouldn't do it. And I knew maybe they would charge slightly more percent royalty or something, which is how the licensing deals work. You pay a royalty for the right to use the brand on your product in a certain way, or on a set product in a certain distribution channel, in a certain environment. All the contracts are very, very well defined, sometimes very restrictive, and limited in time as well. And that's kind of what I was after. And they said, no, actually, we're holding this space for a timepiece sponsor. And that's, we've wanted a timepiece sponsor for England Rugby for a short while now. And so we can't take a licensee in this space because a sponsor would also have the rights to use the brand on a similar type of product. And we need to be really careful about this. And that was a very interesting learning curve for me. And I remember being, you know, I'd wanted to go in there and pay nothing and just offer them royalties as I sold watches. And instead I got back on the train, in Twickenham with my notepad in my pocket that said they want, you know, 6 figures per year to do a sponsorship contract and all this. And I was laughing to myself, sat on the train. But the more I thought about it and I looked at the economics and did the maths, I realized that in some ways they are quite similar. And because there isn't commission-based payments necessarily on a sponsorship deal, which in itself can be quite a flexible feast, if you think you're going to sell a certain amount of products, whatever that might be, or sell a certain amount of services, maybe the revenue you'll generate would equal what you would have paid in royalty fees anyway. And so then there starts to become this mathematical playoff as to, okay, so if it's a sponsorship deal and it's worth this much and I could bring the value down this much, or I could increase the amount of product I could sell by this much, there comes a crossing point where actually a sponsorship deal can be better than a licensing deal.
Right.
And a sponsorship deal also comes with obligations from the other party, from the people that you're sponsoring. So in this instance, there will be marketing obligations from England Rugby and things like that. So they have to do a set amount of marketing or allow us to be included in some of their marketing. And that's an enormously flexible feast as well. And then at the end, you know, there's a very complex deal that comes out of it and all those kinds of things. So I learned the difference between licensing and sponsorship. Mm-hmm. And I learned how flexible those contracts can be. And I learned how fun it can be working through the challenges of distributing risk between the various parties and deciding how you're going to tackle these problems. And you can be as innovative as you want with those solutions.
Oh, it sounds amazing. Like you mentioned, it's a different world and a lot of people kind of think, okay, I'm just going to create the watch to begin with. But obviously it's a new world out there, and to make a watch is obviously it's a skilled task. So speaking about the watchmakers, how are they?
That's the fun bit of it all. I would love to be a watch manufacturer, but we work with Braemont very closely, and those guys have been doing it. They're a relatively new startup. They've only been formed since the early 2000s, but the time and money they have had to invest into having a UK-based manufacturing facility that does high-end watches is phenomenal. And a lot of it's about expertise. They've had to get the right people in-house to be able to get the watchmakers to do all the building and everything. And the, you know, loads of people will say to you or said to us when we started up our company, we're doing licensed products where we're kind of matching manufacturers with licensees and running it internally as a retailer. So they might say to you things like, or why don't you just do the manufacturing yourself? And then you can, you know, lower the manufacturing costs and things like that. And you have to turn around and say, well, I could. I had 300 people's worth of expertise and 2 decades on my hands. You really do have to get a manufacturer for a product like this. You can't do it yourself unless you've got a lot of time and a lot of invested expertise. So it's a really nice product because it just can't be done by anyone. And that's one of the things that we really try and push. It's nice to have a limited edition product of a watch in this scenario that was built in the UK for a British academic institution. And you've got that nice lineage and that kind of storyline that runs all the way through all the way from the licensee through to the manufacturer. It's quite nice. And I think that helps create a product that's more appealing.
Absolutely. It sounds obviously... that relationship is going well, and that obviously producing such a good quality watch is so important, especially with the institution that you guys have come from, Cambridge, and obviously the alignment to Oxford as well. What was your experiences like going to that university?
Well, we're still there. I mean, we're still finishing off our masters at the moment. Or at least attempting to. I feel like both me and Owen are, you know, and actually quite a lot of the people on the course, because the way that our course was set up is that it's all for entrepreneurs, people who are running businesses, or primarily aimed at people like that, and, you know, developing, you know, the skill sets and the network that's really important there. So in a way, our experience isn't amazingly typical. Because it is like, even the course is like, there is the academic level and there's like the minimum academic, but it's all about just the entrepreneurial element on top of it. So all of our, you know, papers and essays and things like that, they're all incredibly geared towards actually the company. And, you know, you're writing 4,000 words about your business is very different from writing it about someone else's business. So there is definitely, it's not amazingly typical in that sense. But the reason why I say that we're trying to at the moment is we've both got I think it's a 20 or 30,000 word dissertation that we've got to hand in within the next 3 months. And that's pretty daunting. So there's two sides to that, I guess.
We're both equally poor at addressing that problem early on. Both receiving the same snotty emails lately saying you've not submitted your ethics report and things like this. So I think we're equally behind on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is really, sorry, I was going to say, what is really a big positive though is just the network and the people around it.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere like Cambridge, which actually, even though it is kind of, you know, old fashioned and there's a lot of that because it is, you know, 800 years old and stuff, and they like to still think that it's, you know, the 13th century still sometimes. Once you get beyond that, it is still a very entrepreneurial university. And, you know, Owen, who lives, you know, round the corner from the university, is just surrounded by tech businesses, by entrepreneurs and things like that. So when there is a question or when there is a problem or something that you want to help with, you can email about 100 people and they'll all be able to help, kind of thing.
Yeah, so that's cool. Like it's like a small problem that we were trying to brainstorm a solution to a couple of weeks ago, and we just emailed the professor who's the head of marketing at the business school, and he took a call with us the next day, and we were already in lockdown, but he took a meeting with us the next day, and we were able to draw from his expertise and just hoover up that fantastic data and have someone with that experience and that mind just analyze our problem with us. And it's so good to have that resource available to you. And that's someone who's nothing to do with our course. He's just also happens to be at Cambridge, just looked him up, sent him a message. Yeah, no, people are so helpful. So it's nice to have that resource kind of on tap nearby.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And I guess, you know, when you normally go to university, you think, okay, let me get a degree, let me get the lessons learned. But it's really about those networks and, you know, staying in touch with them and building those relationships. So that kind of symbolizes that experience is pretty cool.
It's really fascinating. And I mean, I think the course is divided into different types of people, obviously, but I think there are quite a few people like us who probably have benefited the most from the network. That's not to say that the academics aren't useful, but I mean, it's crazy good. We were having a discussion this week about whether to expand our target market into some other regions in the world, like some of the far away, like China, places like that, places where we don't speak the language and can't read the text and things like this. But straight away we're like, what's this platform? How's that bit going to work? Why would we do this bit? And we've got guys on WhatsApp or at the end of a phone who we can ring up and get responses off in like 20 seconds. Do you guys use this website more than that website? No, we use this one. Oh, by the way, I know a guy who was this and he can help you set that up and he won't charge you anything. And having that network is just the resource that just keeps giving. Very, very useful.
No, it's very important, I think. And, you know, it's quite useful. Can you imagine if everyone was wearing those watches and like, oh yeah, you've got a little boys club in that scenario. So what do you want people to feel when they wear those watches?
That's an interesting point. I mean, I think if I was to answer that, I think back to why I had one in the first place from my squadron, and it was almost like a bit of a rite of passage. And I suppose when you've got your wings and you've reached that frontline squadron, it's the culmination of 6 years of training at that point. And it's not something that you would usually go out and buy, but when you wear it, you think you do feel like you're part of something, part of a group of people that have achieved something. And it's not in like an arrogant sense, it's just in like, it's almost a bit of a sentimental, you know, you feel that kind of sentiment of a challenge that you've been through with a group of people who you're very close to. Most of the other guys who are wearing that same watch, and nobody discusses, like nobody ever says, oh, you've got that watch as well, and oh, look at my watch and things like that. You all wear them, like you have to buy one when you get to the frontline squadron. You have to have one because everyone's got one. It's that feeling of sentiment and and now I've left the Air Force, and I still wear my watches sometimes, and I look at them and I think, that was pretty cool. Like, yeah, it's cool. I look down at it and I feel like I was part of something and I enjoyed it. And you have that sentiment of remembering those good times with your mates and things. And I think it's more about that. We do get some feedback that, how are the watches supposed to make people feel? And that's what we're trying to get at. It's hard to convey that through marketing sometimes. It's hard to convey that emotion. And I think that's exactly the challenge that we have to address in our marketing.
Oh, yeah. But I think you guys are already there, because going through your website, I already know what your brand stands for and kind of the watch that it's made for and, you know, the people that you're trying to hit in terms of the demographic. And just out of curiosity, with the lessons that you've learned, how useful was it to sort of understand marketing? Because I guess a lot of products just need heavy marketing to get the...
Oh my God, I still don't understand marketing. That's what Zab is. That's what he's saying.
I think from Owen's point of view, coming from, as he says, you know, a military background, I mean, Owen was flying planes in the military, what, 18 months ago, 19 months, I don't know, at the beginning of this thing. So he's come from not even a business background of anything, and then coming into needing to get marketing working, needing to get the business up and running. So I think that there's a massive learning, definitely was a massive learning curve there. Understanding marketing for us, it's, you know, everything we do is online, everything we do is digital pretty much. We do occasionally have, you know, in-person shows, obviously not at the moment, you know, graduations, that kind of thing. But understanding the messaging, understanding how we have to get that across, as Owen says, we've got to get that sentiment right. A lot of the time it's actually quite good, because the way what we tend to hit on a lot of the time is things like nostalgia from alumni, you know, people remembering the old days, people remembering, oh, you know, that was really good, as well as the, as Owen says, the rite of passage. So a lot of people see the watches and immediately identify with that. The challenge obviously is people who maybe don't immediately identify with that, or people who, you know, you need to explain that this is this amazing sort of brand that you're aligned with, something that you've gone through, and connecting with that. And that's where the challenge for marketing is. The other thing, of course, on marketing right now, it's all data focused, and it's all about building up data and building up demographic and building up the, you know, the understanding of that. And that's something that definitely as a company, Oxford Watches had to learn and adapt to. And we're now in a position where actually our digital presence, we're, you know, engaging with a lot of people really cost effectively with ads and things like that, because we've built up this data. So it is quite exciting, and, you know, lessons learned, I'd say, for anyone who's starting something like this or anything, starting any company, is get that data going as soon as possible. Start building up a presence, start building up who this demographic is, and start understanding that so that you can expand, so you can put more budget into that kind of marketing or this kind of marketing, and understanding that and just growing up like that. So lessons learned, you know, to summarize, it's understand marketing. It's a huge learning curve if you've got no experience in it, but get a sort of understanding of it. And secondly, start building data up on people, because it's the most valuable thing you can do with marketing.
Anonymous data.
When I say data, I'm not talking metadata and all of that stuff. I'm not saying, you know, start stalking people. Sorry. That's me talking as someone with a background in marketing who, you know, it's assumed that it's all metadata. That's what I meant, of course.
Is there any room for like expansion, or like you said, you probably want to have a few hands in other sort of areas to do with the brand? Would it be outside of watches, or is it something
more? Yeah, you know, one of the really interesting things about this company is that the kind of the shop front that you see on the website is the Oxford and Cambridge watches, and there's just a little page at the side that says brands. Underlying all of that is the what is active right now, the Raymond sponsorship of England Rugby, which we brokered and underwrote and are getting and our part of that is to do with commission off of watch sales. But we were a huge part in negotiating that. It took 14 months to get that deal through the door. And I suppose the really exciting part for us moving forward is taking the...
Hey podcast listeners, thanks for listening, and thanks for my special guest, and thanks for clicking the play button. But I need you to do four things for me. I want you to like, comment, subscribe, and share this content. It will help tremendously with the growth of this podcast, and I'm producing more content than ever. So I want you guys to be the first to know, and I want others to know as well. So do those four things for me and help this podcast grow to a bigger platform. Thanks for listening.